never invite you to my house again. Remember Dr. Rory, who was so nasty to his wife during their Christmas Day picnic at the hospital? When a resident phoned, he was very pleasant to him. This is not an infrequent phenomenon. In the midst of a bitter dispute, the husband or wife picks up a ringing telephone and is suddenly all smiles. Oh, hi. Yes, it would be great to have lunch. No problem. Tuesday would be fine. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that you didn't get the job. You must feel so disappointed. And so on. Suddenly, the angry, rigid spouse has been transformed into a flexible, rational, understanding, and compassionate being. Until the phone call is over. Then he or she just as suddenly morphs back into someone scowling and immovable, all for the partner's benefit. It just doesn't have to be that way. Keep in mind, as you work your way through these steps, that what's really being asked of you is no more than would be asked if you were dealing with an acquaintance, much less the person who has vowed to share his or her life with you. Step 1. Soften your startup. If there's one similarity between happy and unhappy marriages, it's that in both circumstances, the wife is far more likely than the husband to bring up a touchy issue and to push to resolve it. But there's a dramatic difference in how the wife brings it up. Remember Dara, who lit into her husband Oliver as soon as they began discussing housework? Within a minute, she was being sarcastic and batting down every suggestion he made. Do you think you really work well with lists? And I think you do a pretty good job of coming home and lying around and disappearing into the bathroom. Compare Dara's harsh approach with that of Justine, who is happily married to Michael, but has the same problem. He doesn't do his share around the house. What bugs her the most is that she always ends up folding the laundry, which she hates. Here's what she says in the Love Lab when she broaches the topic with Michael. Justine. Okay. Deep breath. Housework. Michael. Yeah, well, I mean, I definitely clean off the counters in the kitchen and the table whenever we do stuff. Defensive. Justine. Mm-hmm. You do. Repair attempt. Michael. Mm-hmm. He's relaxed. Justine's repair attempt was successful. Justine. I think it's just, like, sometimes when things are just kind of left, or the laundry just piles up. Softened startup. Michael. Yeah, I haven't even been thinking about laundry. Laughs. I mean, I just haven't been thinking about it at all. Not defensive. Justine laughs. That's kind of cute. Who do you think's doing it? You keep having clothes to wear. Michael. Yeah, I guess. Justine. And maybe that's okay, but it just gets to me after a while. Michael. Well, it hasn't even crossed my mind that, like, we have to do the laundry. Chuckles. Justine. Actually, Tim's been folding them. A neighbor in their apartment complex. The washer and dryer are in a communal laundry room. I left a load in, and then when I passed by, the sheets were folded. Michael. Maybe we should put a hamper in his room. Justine laughs. Shared humor de-escalates tension and lowers heart rates. Michael. So, okay, like maybe every other day or something when I first get back home from work. Justine. Yeah, you could fold what makes sense, especially towels and underwear and the sheets. Michael. Yeah, I'll just look in the basket. He is accepting her influence. Justine. Okay. Perhaps the most important quality of this exchange is the virtual absence of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling, those hallmarks of marriage-harming conflict. The reason for their absence is that Justine's startup is soft. In contrast, a harsh startup usually begins the cycle of the four horsemen, which leads to flooding and, in turn, increased emotional distance and loneliness that lets the marriage wither. Only 40% of the time do couples divorce because they are having frequent, devastating fights. More often, marriages end because to avoid constant skirmishes, husband and wife distance themselves so much that their friendship and sense of connection are lost. That's why it's so important that when Michael admits that he doesn't even think about the laundry, Justine doesn't get critical or contemptuous. She laughs and says she thinks that's cute. Because Justine is gentle with Michael, their conversation actually produces a result. They come up with a plan to resolve the conflict. Since they are able to do this, their discussion leaves them feeling positive about themselves and their marriage. That feeling is money in the bank for any couple. It inspires an optimistic attitude that will help them resolve the next conflict that comes along. In another happy marriage, the big issue is that the wife, Andrea, wants her husband, Dave, to become more involved with the church. But she hardly bangs him over the head with a Bible. Instead, she says, "Going to church is not something I need every day, but it's a comfort." Then she tells him, "I don't like you going just because of me." By the time she tells him directly, "I want a little bit more involvement from you than just Easter, Christmas, and Mother's Day," he is ready to compromise. "Okay, I'll go to church on big important days, and maybe some Sundays." A soft startup doesn't necessarily have to be this diplomatic. It just has to be devoid of criticism or contempt. In a healthy, volatile marriage, which can be very confrontational, the wife is more likely to say something like, "Hey, I know I can be a slob sometimes myself, but I'm really angry that you walked by the laundry basket last night without stopping to fold any sheets. I don't like having to fold them all myself." Or, "I feel really strongly that we need to go to church together more often. This is very important to me." These are soft startups because they are direct complaints rather than criticisms or contemptuous accusations. Softening the startup is crucial to resolving conflicts because my research finds discussions invariably end on the same note they begin. That's why 96% of the time, I can predict the fate of a conflict discussion in the first 3 minutes. If you start an argument harshly, meaning you attack your spouse verbally, you'll end up with at least as much tension as you began with. But if you use a softened startup, meaning you complain but don't criticize or otherwise attack your spouse, the discussion is likely to be productive. And if most of your arguments start softly, your marriage is likely to be stable and happy. Although either spouse can be responsible for a harsh startup, we've found that the vast majority of the time, the culprit is the wife. This is because in our culture, the wife is far more likely than her husband to bring up difficult issues and push to get them resolved. Husbands are more likely to try to distance themselves from hard-to-face concerns. As I've noted, there are physiological reasons for this gender gap. Men tend to experience flooding much more easily because their bodies are more reactive to emotional stress than their wives. So they are more inclined to avoid confrontation. Harsh startup questionnaire. To get a sense of whether harsh startup is a problem in your marriage, answer the following questions. Listen to each statement and jot down whether it's true or false. When we begin to discuss our marital issues, 1. My partner is often very critical of me. 2. I hate the way my partner raises an issue. 3. Arguments often seem to come out of nowhere. 4. Before I know it, we are in a fight. 5. When my partner complains, I feel picked on. 6. I seem to always get blamed for issues. 7. My partner is negative all out of proportion. 8. I feel I have to ward off personal attacks. 9. I often have to deny charges leveled against me. 10. My partner's feelings are too easily hurt. 11. What goes wrong is often not my responsibility. 12. My spouse criticizes my personality. 13. Issues get raised in an insulting manner. 14. My partner will at times complain in a smug or superior way. 15. I've just about had it with all this negativity between us. 16. I feel basically disrespected when my partner complains. 17. I just want to leave the scene when complaints arise. 18. Our calm is suddenly shattered. 19. I find my partner's negativity unnerving and unsettling. 20. I think my partner can be totally irrational. Scoring. Give yourself 1 point for each true answer. Under 5, this is an area of strength in your marriage. You and your spouse initiate difficult discussions with each other gently, without being critical or contemptuous. Because you avoid being harsh, your chances of resolving your conflict or learning to manage it successfully together are dramatically increased. 5 or above, your marriage could stand some improvement in this area. Your score suggests that when you address areas of disagreement with your spouse, one of you tends to be harsh. That means you immediately trot out at least one of the four horsemen, which automatically prevents the issue from being resolved. Although the wife is usually responsible for a harsh setup, the secret to avoiding it is for both of you to work together on the first four principles. Do this, and the wife's startup softens as a matter of course. So if your spouse tends to raise issues harshly, the best advice I can give is to make sure she or he is feeling known, respected, and loved by you, and that you accept her influence. Harsh startup is often a reaction that sets in when a wife feels her husband doesn't respond to her low-level complaints or irritability. So if you comply with a minor request like, "It's your turn to take out the garbage, please," you avoid having the situation escalate into, "What the hell is wrong with you? Are you deaf? Take out the damn garbage!" If you are the one most responsible for harsh startups in your relationship, I can't emphasize enough how important it is to the fate of your marriage to soften up. Remember, if you go straight for the jugular, you're going to draw plenty of blood. The result will be war or retreat on your partner's part, rather than any kind of meaningful, productive discussion. If you're angry with your spouse, it's worth taking a deep breath and thinking through how to broach the subject before leaping in. It will be easier to do this if you constantly remind yourself that by being gentle, you're more likely to resolve the conflict. If you feel too angry to discuss the matter gently, your best option is not to discuss it at all until you calm down. Follow the steps for self-soothing, which I'll discuss in a few minutes, before talking it out with your spouse. Here are some suggestions to ensure that your startup is soft. Complain, but don't blame. Let's assume that you're angry because your spouse insisted on buying a dog despite your reservations. He swore up and down that he'd clean up after the dog. But now you're finding poop all over the yard whenever you take out the garbage. It's certainly okay to complain. You could say something like, "Hey, there's poop all over the backyard. We agreed you'd clean up after Banjo. I'm really upset about this." While this is confrontational, it's not an attack. You're simply complaining about a particular situation, not your partner's personality or character. What's not okay is to say something like, "Hey, there's poop all over the backyard. This is all your fault. I just knew you'd be irresponsible about that dog. I should never have trusted you about it in the first place." However justified you may feel in blaming your spouse, the bottom line is that this approach is not productive. Even if it does lead your partner to clean up the yard, it also leads to increased tension, resentment, defensiveness, and so on. Make statements that start with "I" instead of "you." I statements have been a staple of interpersonal psychology ever since the mid-1960s, when acclaimed psychologist Haim Ganat noted that phrases starting with "I" are usually less likely to be critical and to make the listener defensive than statements starting with "you." You can see the difference. "You are not listening to me," versus "I would like it if you'd listen to me." "You are careless with money," versus "I want us to save more." "You just don't care about me," versus "I'm feeling neglected." Clearly, the I statements above are gentler than their you counterparts. Of course, you can also buck this general rule and come up with I statements like, "I think you are selfish," that are hardly gentle. So the point is not to start talking to your spouse in some stilted psychobabble. Just keep in mind that if your words focus on how you're feeling rather than on accusing your spouse, your discussion will be far more successful. Describe what is happening. Don't evaluate or judge. Instead of accusing or blaming, just describe what you see. Instead of "you never watch the baby," say, "I seem to be the only one chasing after Charlie today." Again, this will help prevent your spouse from feeling attacked and waging a defense rather than really considering your point. Be clear. Don't expect your partner to be a mind reader. Instead of "you left the dining room a total mess," say, "I'd appreciate it if you would clean your stuff off the dining room table." Instead of, "Would you take care of the baby for once?" say, "Please change Emmy's diaper and give her a bottle." Be polite. Add phrases such as "please" and "I would appreciate it if..." Be appreciative. If your partner has at some point handled this situation better, then couch your request with an appreciation of what your partner did right in the past and how much you miss that now. Instead of, "You never have time for me anymore," say, "Remember how we used to go out every Saturday night? I loved spending so much time alone with you, and it felt so good knowing that you wanted to be with me too. Let's start doing that again." Don't store things up. It's hard to be gentle when you're ready to burst with recriminations. So don't wait too long before bringing up an issue, otherwise it will just escalate in your mind. As the Bible says, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, "Let not the sun go down upon your wrath." To see how all of these steps combine to create a softened startup, compare what Iris says in the following two dialogues. Harsh startup. Iris: "Another Saturday, and once again I'm spending my free time picking up after you. The trouble with you, Richard, is that..." Criticism, blame. Richard: "Yep, here we go again. The trouble with you, Richard. The trouble with you, Richard. There's nothing wrong with me." Iris: "Then why do I always have to tell you what to do?" "Never mind. I finished cleaning up your stuff anyway. Or were you too busy reading the Sunday paper to notice?" Contempt. Richard: "Look, I hate cleaning up. I know you do too. I've been thinking about what we should do." Repair attempt. Iris: "This I've got to hear." More contempt. Richard: "Well, actually, I was thinking that we could use a vacation. Wouldn't it be nice for you to be waited on hand and foot?" Second repair attempt. Iris: "Come on. We can't afford a cleaning lady, much less a vacation like that." Soften startup. Iris: "This house is an incredible mess, and we're having company tonight." Describing: "I am really upset that I'm doing all of this cleaning alone on a Saturday." I statement: "Come on, please help me. Maybe you could do the vacuuming." Being clear. Richard: "All right, I hate cleaning up, but I guess vacuuming is the best of the worst. I'll do the bathrooms, too." Iris: "That'd be a big help. Appreciation. Thank you." Politeness. Richard: "When we're done, we deserve a reward. Let's go out for lunch." Iris: "Okay." When you switch to a soft startup, your spouse may not automatically react so sweetly. He or she may still be anticipating criticism or contempt from you, and therefore respond negatively. Don't give up or fall into the trap of then escalating the conflict. Continue to broach the topic gently, and eventually you will see a change in how your spouse responds, especially if you are working on all of the other aspects of Principle 5 together. Here are some other examples that illustrate the difference between a harsh startup and a softened alternative. Harsh startup: "You never touch me." Softened alternative: "I loved it when you kissed me in the kitchen the other day." "You are a natural-born kisser. Let's do that some more." Harsh startup: "I see you dented the car again. When are you going to stop being so reckless?" Softened alternative: "I saw that new dent. What happened? I'm really getting worried about your driving, and I want you to be safe. Can we talk about this?" Harsh startup: "You always ignore me." Softened alternative: "I've been missing you lately, and I'm getting a little lonely." Exercise 1, soften startup. Now test your own ability to soften a harsh startup. For each item that follows, supply a softened alternative. Sample answers follow. 1. When your mother-in-law visits tonight, you plan to tell her how much it hurts you when she criticizes your parenting skills. You want your partner, who is very defensive when it comes to mom, to back you up. Harsh startup: "I can't stand it when your mother comes over." Your softened alternative. 2. You wish that your partner would cook dinner tomorrow night or take you out to dinner. Harsh startup: "You never take me anywhere. I'm sick of doing all the cooking." Your softened alternative. 3. You think that your partner spends too much time with other people instead of you when you go to parties. Tonight, you want your partner to stick by you. Harsh startup. I just know that tonight you're going to be flirting shamelessly again at the party. Your softened alternative. 4. You're upset that you have not made love in some time. You're feeling unsure that your partner finds you attractive. You wish that the two of you could make love tonight. Harsh startup. You're always so cold to me. Your softened alternative. 5. You want your partner to ask for a raise. Harsh startup. You're too wimpy to get a raise for your own family. Your softened alternative. 6. You want to do more fun things together on the weekends. Harsh startup. You have no idea how to have a good time. You're a workaholic. Your softened alternative. 7. You wish that the two of you could save more money. Harsh startup. You don't have a clue about how to manage money. Your softened alternative. 8. You wish your partner would spend more money buying you surprise presents. Harsh startup. When was the last time you bought me anything? Your softened alternative. Sample answers. 1. I'm worried that your mom is going to be critical of me tonight and that you won't back me up. 2. I'm tired of cooking. It'd be real nice if you took me out. 3. I'm feeling very shy tonight again. Please spend time with me and make it easier for me to talk to other people. You're so good at that. 4. I'm really missing you lately. You know how much you turn me on. Let's make love. 5. It would be great if you could get a raise soon. What if we talked about a plan for getting one? 6. I really want to spend some fun time with you this weekend. How about not working and let's do something fun together? There's a great movie I'd really like to see. 7. I'm feeling anxious about our savings. Let's come up with a savings plan, okay? 8. I'm feeling very deprived lately, and I would love it if we surprised each other with a present out of the blue this week. What do you think? Step 2. Learning to make and receive repair attempts. When you take driving lessons, the first thing you're taught is how to stop the car. Putting on the brakes is an important skill in a marriage, too. When your discussion starts off on the wrong foot, or if you find yourself in an endless cycle of recriminations, you can prevent a disaster if you know how to stop. I call these breaks repair attempts. When Michael gets defensive and says, "I definitely clean off the counters in the kitchen and table whenever we do stuff," Justine doesn't immediately discount his point. "Mm-hmm, you do," she says. This is a repair attempt. It de-escalates the tension so that Michael is more receptive to finding a compromise. What separates stable, emotionally intelligent marriages from others is not that their repair attempts are necessarily more skillful or better thought out, but that their repair attempts get through to their spouse. This is because the air between them hasn't been clouded by a lot of negativity. Repair Attempts Questionnaire. To assess the effectiveness of repair attempts in your own relationship, answer the following. Listen to each statement and write down whether it's true or false. During our attempts to resolve conflict, 1. We are good at taking breaks when we need them. 2. My partner usually accepts my apologies. 3. I can say that I am wrong. 4. I am pretty good at calming myself down. 5. We can maintain a sense of humor. 6. When my partner says we should talk to each other in a different way, it usually makes a lot of sense. 7. My attempts to repair our discussions when they get negative are usually effective. 8. We are pretty good listeners even when we have different positions on things. 9. If things get heated, we can usually pull out of it and change things. 10. My spouse is good at soothing me when I get upset. 11. I feel confident that we can resolve most issues between us. 12. When I comment on how we could communicate better, my spouse listens to me. 13. Even if things get hard at times, I know we can get past our differences. 14. We can be affectionate even when we are disagreeing. 15. Teasing and humor usually work to get my spouse over negativity. 16. We can start all over again and improve our discussions when we need to. 17. When emotions run hot, expressing how upset I feel makes a real difference. 18. We can discuss even big differences between us. 19. My partner expresses appreciation for nice things I do. 20. If I keep trying to communicate, it will eventually work. Scoring. Give yourself 1 point for each true answer. 6 or above, this is an area of strength in your marriage. When marital discussions are at risk of getting out of hand, you are able to put on the brakes and effectively calm each other down. Below 6, your marriage could stand some improvement in this area. By learning how to repair your interactions when negativity engulfs you, you can dramatically improve the effectiveness of your problem solving and develop a more positive perspective of each other and your marriage. Getting the message through. As I said, the key factor in whether a repair attempt is effective is the state of the relationship. In happy marriages, couples send and receive repair attempts with ease. In unhappy ones, even the most eloquent repair attempt can fall on deaf ears. But now that you know this, you can buck the system. You don't have to wait for your marriage to improve before you start hearing each other's repair attempts. Start now by focusing intently on these breaks and training each other to recognize when one is sent your way. Do this, and you can pull yourselves out of the downward cycle of negativity. Your future together can be bright, even if your disagreements tend to be very negative. The secret is learning the right kind of damage control. One reason couples miss each other's repair attempts is that they don't always come sugar-coated. If your spouse yells, "You're getting off the topic," or grumbles, "Can we take a break?" that's a repair attempt despite the negative delivery. If you listen to your partner's tone rather than the words, you could miss his real message, which is, "Stop, this is getting out of hand." Because repair attempts can be difficult to hear if your relationship is engulfed in negativity, the best strategy is to make your attempts obviously formal in order to emphasize them. Next, you'll hear a long list of scripted phrases. These are specific words you can say to your spouse to de-escalate the tension. By using them when arguments get too negative, you'll be able to keep your discussions from spiraling out of control. Many, if not all of these phrases, probably sound phony and unnatural to you right now. That's because they offer a very different way of speaking with your spouse when you're upset. But their phoniness is not a reason to reject them. If you learned a better and more effective way to hold your tennis racket, it would feel wrong and unnatural initially, simply because you weren't used to it yet. The same goes for these repair attempts. Over time, they'll come easily to you, and you'll modify them to more closely suit your style of speech and personality. I feel 1. I'm getting scared. 2. Please say that more gently. 3. Did I do something wrong? 4. That hurt my feelings. 5. That felt like an insult. 6. I'm feeling sad. 7. I feel blamed. Can you rephrase that? 8. I'm feeling unappreciated. 9. I feel defensive. Can you rephrase that? 10. Please don't lecture me. 11. I don't feel like you understand me right now. 12. I am starting to feel flooded. 13. I feel criticized. Can you rephrase that? 14. I'm getting worried. I need to calm down. 1. Can you make things safer for me? 2. I need things to be calmer right now. 3. I need your support right now. 4. Just listen to me right now and try to understand. 5. Tell me you love me. 6. Can I have a kiss? 7. Can I take that back? 8. Please be gentler with me. 9. Please help me calm down. 10. Please be quiet and listen to me. 11. This is important to me. Please listen. 12. I need to finish what I was saying. 13. I am starting to feel flooded. 14. I feel criticized. Can you rephrase that? 15. Can we take a break? Sorry. 1. My reactions were too extreme. Sorry. 2. I really blew that one. 3. Let me try again. 4. I want to be gentler to you right now, and I don't know how. 5. Tell me what you hear me saying. 6. I can see my part in all this. 7. How can I make things better? 8. Let's try that over again. 9. What you are saying is... 10. Let me start again in a softer way. 11. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Get to yes. 1. You're starting to convince me. 2. I agree with part of what you're saying. 3. Let's compromise here. 4. Let's find our common ground. 5. I never thought of things that way. 6. This problem is not very serious in the big picture. 7. I think your point of view makes sense. 8. Let's agree to include both our views in a solution. 9. I am thankful for... 10. One thing I admire about you is... 11. I see what you're talking about. Stop action. 1. I might be wrong here. 2. Please, let's stop for a while. 3. Let's take a break. 4. Give me a moment, I'll be back. 5. I'm feeling flooded. 6. Please stop. 7. Let's agree to disagree here. 8. Let's start all over again. 9. Hang in there, don't withdraw. 10. I want to change the topic. 11. We are getting off track. I appreciate. 1. I know this isn't your fault. 2. My part of this problem is... 3. I see your point. 4. Thank you for... 5. That's a good point. 6. We are both saying... 7. I understand. 8. I love you. 9. I am thankful for... 10. One thing I admire about you is... 11. This is not your problem, it's our problem. Formalizing repair attempts by using these scripted phrases can help you diffuse arguments in two ways. First, the formality of a script ensures that you will use the types of words that work well for putting on the brakes. Second, these phrases are like megaphones. They help ensure that you pay attention to a repair attempt when you're on the receiving end. Now it's time to use the preceding list to help you resolve an issue in your marriage. Choose a low-intensity conflict to discuss. Each of you gets to talk for 15 minutes. Make sure you both use at least one phrase from the list of phrases during the discussion. Announce to your partner beforehand that you're about to make a repair attempt. You can even refer to the attempt by number, as in, I'm making repair attempt number 6 under I feel. I'm feeling sad. When your partner announces a repair attempt, your job is simply to try to accept it. View the interruption as a bid to make things better. Accept the attempt in the spirit in which it was intended. This entails accepting your partner's influence. For example, if he or she says, I need to finish what I'm saying, acknowledge that need, and then encourage your partner to keep talking to you. As you continue to use the list in your conversations, eventually you might consider replacing it with some other ritual, like raising your hand and announcing point blank, this is a repair attempt. Or you may come up with other effective repairs that better fit your personality and relationship. For example, a couple we know say clip-clop to each other if one of them introduces one of the four horsemen into a discussion. The humor in this repair helps diffuse the negativity all the more. Step 3. Soothe yourself and each other. While Justine is in the middle of discussing laundry with Michael, he does something that seems incidental, but really has great significance for their chances of a happy future. He yawns. Cleaning house is not the most fascinating subject, but Michael doesn't yawn because Justine is boring him. He yawns because he is relaxed. When you're feeling angry or anxious, yawning is just about the least likely physiological reaction you're going to have. Michael's yawn is like an announcement that he's feeling soothed by Justine, even though she's discussing an area of conflict. Because no alarms are going off in his body or mind, he is able to discuss housework and reach a compromise with Justine easily. It is harder for a man's body to calm down after an argument than a woman's. In less stable marriages, however, conflict discussions can lead to the opposite reaction. They can trigger flooding. When this occurs, you feel overwhelmed both emotionally and physically. Most likely, you think thoughts of righteous indignation. I don't have to take this anymore. Or innocent victimhood. Why is she always picking on me? Meanwhile, your body is in distress. Usually your heart is pounding, you're sweating, you're holding your breath. I have found that in the vast majority of cases, when one spouse does not get the other's repair attempt, it's because the listener is flooded and therefore can't really hear what the spouse is saying. When you're in this condition, the most thoughtful repair attempt in the world won't benefit your marriage. Flooding questionnaire. To discover whether flooding is a significant problem in your relationship, answer the following questions. Listen to each statement and write down whether it's true or false. 1. Our discussions get too heated. 2. I have a hard time calming down. 3. One of us is going to say something we will regret. 4. My partner gets too upset. 5. After a fight, I want to keep my distance. 6. My partner yells unnecessarily. 7. I feel overwhelmed by our arguments. 8. I can't think straight when my partner gets hostile. 9. Why can't we talk more logically? 10. My partner's negativity often comes out of nowhere. 11. There's often no stopping my partner's temper. 12. I feel like running away during our fights. 13. Small issues suddenly become big ones. 14. I can't calm down very easily during an argument. 15. My partner has a long list of unreasonable demands. Scoring. Give yourself 1 point for each true answer. Below 6, this is an area of strength in your marriage. You are able to confront differences of opinion with your spouse without feeling overwhelmed. This means that you are not feeling victimized or hostile toward your spouse during disagreements. That's good news, since it indicates that you're able to communicate with each other without negativity getting out of hand. As a result, you're better able to resolve conflicts and avoid gridlock over issues that are unresolvable. 6 or above, your marriage could stand some improvement in this area. Your score suggests that you tend to get flooded during arguments with your spouse. When this occurs, any likelihood that the problem can be resolved ceases. You are feeling too agitated to really hear what your spouse is saying or to learn any helpful conflict resolution skills. Read on to find out how to cope with this problem. Exercise 2, self-soothing. The first step is to stop the discussion. If you keep going, you'll find yourself exploding at your spouse or imploding, stonewalling, neither of which will get you anywhere other than one step farther down the marital cascades that lead to divorce. The only reasonable strategy, therefore, is to let your spouse know that you're feeling flooded and need to take a break. That break should last at least 20 minutes, since it will be that long before your body calms down. It's crucial that during this time you avoid thoughts of righteous indignation and innocent victimhood. Spend your time doing something soothing and distracting, like listening to music or exercising. Many people find that the best approach to self-soothing is to focus on calming the body through a meditative technique. Here's a simple one. 1. Sit in a comfortable chair or lie on your back on the floor. 2. Focus on controlling your breathing. Usually when you get flooded, you either hold your breath a lot or breathe shallowly. So close your eyes and focus on taking deep, regular breaths. 3. Relax your muscles. One at a time, tightly squeeze the muscle groups that seem tense. Usually your forehead and jaw, neck, shoulders, arms, and back. Hold for 2 seconds, then release. 4. Let the tension flow out of each muscle group, and get that muscle group to feel heavy by imagining that it is. 5. Let the tension flow out of each now heavy muscle group, and get that muscle group to feel warm. One way is to keep your eyes closed and focus on one calming vision or idea. Many people find it effective to think of a place they associate with calmness, like a forest, a lake, or a beach. Imagine this place as vividly as you can. Keep focused on this calming vision for about 30 seconds. 6. Find a personal image that brings all of this soothing to mind. For example, I think of a place I know on Orca Island in Washington State, where the loudest sound is the wind rustling the trees as young eagles residing in a nearby rookery soar by. Conjuring that image relaxes me and automatically triggers all of the other steps of self-soothing. I think taking a break of this sort is so important that I schedule this exercise into the conflict resolution section of every workshop I run. Invariably, I get the same response from participants. At first, they moan and groan about being forced to relax. Some are quite cynical about relaxation exercises and can't see how closing their eyes and thinking about a lake can help cure their marital woes. And yet, once they do the exercise, they realize how powerful and helpful it really is. Suddenly, everybody in the room relaxes. You can see the difference in how couples relate to each other. Their voices get softer. There is more chuckling. Soothing themselves has made them better able to work on their conflicts as a team rather than as adversaries. In one of our latest experiments, we interrupted couples after 15 minutes and told them we needed to adjust the equipment. We asked them not to talk about their issue, but just to read magazines for half an hour. When they started talking about their issue again, their heart rates were significantly lower and their interaction more productive. Exercise 3. Soothing each other. Once you've calmed down yourself, you can benefit your marriage enormously if you then take some time to calm each other. Obviously, this can be quite difficult to do if you're feeling very angry or hurt, but the results can be so impressive that it's worth trying. Remember, only do this after you've already spent 20 minutes calming down on your own. Soothing your partner is of enormous benefit to a marriage because it's really a form of reverse conditioning. In other words, if you frequently have the experience of being calmed by your spouse, you will stop seeing your partner as a trigger of stress in your life and instead associate him or her with feeling relaxed. This automatically increases the positivity in your relationship. To comfort each other, you first need to talk earnestly about flooding. Ask yourself and each other these questions. What makes me or you feel flooded? How do I or you typically bring up issues or irritability or complaints? Do I or you store things up? Is there anything I can do that soothes you? Is there anything you can do that soothes me? What signals can we develop for letting the other know when we feel flooded? Can we take breaks? If your heart rate exceeds 100 beats per minute, you won't be able to hear what your spouse is trying to tell you, no matter how hard you try. Take a 20-minute break before continuing. There are many different ways to calm your spouse. What matters most is that your partner determines the method and enjoys it. Some couples find massage the perfect antidote to a stressful discussion. Another helpful technique is to take turns guiding each other through a meditation like the one just described. Think of it as a verbal massage. You can even write an elaborate script in which you have your partner tighten and relax different muscle groups and then visualize a calm, beautiful scene that brings him or her pleasure. You can tape record your rendition for future use. Perhaps give it to your spouse as a special gift. You don't need to wait for a tense situation to use this exercise. Soothing each other regularly is a wonderful way to prevent future flooding and generally enrich your marriage. Step 4. Compromise. Like it or not, the only solution to marital problems is to find a compromise. In an intimate, loving relationship, it just doesn't work for either of you to get things all your way, even if you're convinced that you're right. This approach would create such inequity and unfairness that the marriage would suffer. Usually, though both partners do make an earnest effort to compromise on issues, they fail because they go about trying to compromise in the wrong way. Negotiation is possible only after you've followed the steps above: softening startup, repairing your discussion, and keeping calm. These prime you for compromise by getting you into a positive mode. Before you try to resolve a conflict, remember that the cornerstone of any compromise is the fourth principle of marriage: accepting influence. This means that for a compromise to work, you can't have a closed mind to your spouse's opinions and desires. You don't have to agree with everything your spouse says or believes, but you have to be honestly open to considering his or her position. That's what accepting influence is really all about. If you find yourself sitting with your arms folded and shaking your head no, or just thinking it, when your spouse is trying to talk out a problem with you, your discussion will never get anywhere. As I've said, men have a harder time accepting influence from their wives than vice versa. But whatever your gender, an inability to be open-minded is a real liability when it comes to conflict resolution. So if you haven't already, work through the exercises in Chapter 6. Realize that it may take time and continued self-awareness to break out of this tendency. Your spouse can assist you in seeing things from his or her perspective. Ask your spouse questions to help you see his or her point of view. Remember to search for the part of your spouse's perspective that, by objective standards, is reasonable. Once you're ready, there's nothing magical about finding a solution you both can live with. Often compromise is just a matter of talking out your differences and preferences in a systematic way. This is not difficult to do, as long as you continue to follow the steps above to prevent your discussion from becoming overwhelmingly negative. Exercise 4. Finding common ground. Decide together which solvable problems you want to tackle. Then sit separately and think about the problem. On a piece of paper, draw two circles, a smaller one inside a larger one. In the inner circle, make a list of the aspects of the problem you can't give in on. In the outer circle, list all of the aspects of the problem you can compromise about. Remember the Aikido principle of yielding to win. The more able you are to compromise, the better able you'll be to persuade your spouse. So try hard to make your outer circle as large as possible and your inner circle as small as possible. Here are the inner and outer circles of a couple named Raymond and Carol, who were both dissatisfied with their sex life. Raymond. Inner circle. 1. I want sex to be more erotic. 2. I want there to be fantasy play with you wearing very sexy lingerie. Outer circle. 1. I can compromise on whether to have sex in the morning or at night, even when I'm tired. 2. I can compromise on our talking during sex. Carol. Inner circle. 1. I want to feel like we're making love when we're having sex. 2. I want Raymond to hold me and stroke me a lot. I want a lot of foreplay. Outer circle. 1. I prefer to have sex at night because I love falling asleep in your arms afterward. But sex in the morning would be okay too. 2. Talking to me a lot while we make love is nice, but I can compromise on this too. Once you've filled in your circles, your lists may be much longer than Raymond's and Carol's, come back and share them with each other. Look for common bases of agreement. Remember, as you discuss this, to make use of all the other problem-solving strategies outlined in this chapter, namely, soften startup and soothing yourself or each other if flooding occurs. In the case of Carol and Raymond, their inner circles are very different, but they are not incompatible. Once they accept and respect their sexual differences, They can create lovemaking sessions that incorporate his desire for erotic fantasy with her longing for intimacy and lots of touching. And although their outer circles are in opposition as well, they are willing to give in these areas, so compromise should be easy. Maybe they'll decide to switch off with morning and evening sex, depending on how tired Raymond is. And they can vary how much they speak during sex as well. The goal of this circle exercise is to try to develop a common way of thinking about the issue so that you work together to construct a real plan that you can both live with. As you share your circles, ask yourselves the following questions. 1. What do we agree about? 2. What are our common feelings or the most important feelings here? 3. What common goals can we have here? 4. How can we understand this situation, this issue? 5. How do we think these goals should be accomplished? Most likely, if you're grappling with a solvable problem, following these steps will lead you to find a reasonable compromise. Once you do, try out the solution for an agreed-upon time before revisiting it and deciding if it's working. If it's not, begin the process again and work together to resolve it. From time to time, it's a good idea to recharge your compromising skills by focusing together on solving a problem that is not related to your marital issues. What follows is a fun exercise that will give you practice in coming to consensus decisions by working as a team and giving and accepting influence. Exercise 5, Paper Tower. This exercise is especially fun to do with other couples. Consider having a paper tower party or contest where each couple is a separate team. You can take turns being builders and scorekeepers. Your mission: build a freestanding paper tower using the supplies I will list. The goal is to build the highest, most stable, and most beautiful tower you can. You may have very different ideas about how to go about this. So remember to work out your differences of opinion using the compromise approach described in this chapter. During this exercise, try to be a team. Try both to give and to accept influence. Include your partner. Ask questions. Take about half an hour for this task. The finished product should not adhere exactly to either of your visions, but should include both of them. When you're finished, have a third party, or another couple, score your tower. No doubt the scoring will be highly subjective, since it values creativity more than engineering prowess. But your final score is beside the point, which is to have fun building your tower together. When you're finished, you'll have created a monument to your marriage and your enhanced compromising skills. Supplies: 1 Sunday newspaper, crayons, ball of string, colored cellophane, scotch tape, construction paper, stapler, cardboard pieces, markers. Score: have a third party or another couple score your tower. The top score is 90. You get up to 20 points for height, up to 20 points for strength, stability, up to 50 points for beauty and originality. Step 5, be tolerant of each other's faults. Too often, a marriage gets bogged down in if-onlys. If only your spouse were taller, richer, smarter, neater, or sexier, all of your problems would vanish. As long as this attitude prevails, conflicts will be very difficult to resolve. Until you accept your partner's flaws and foibles, you will not be able to compromise successfully. Instead, you will be on a relentless campaign to alter your spouse. Conflict resolution is not about one person changing. It's about negotiating, finding common ground and ways that you can accommodate each other. When you have mastered the general problem-solving skills outlined in this chapter, you'll find that many of your problems find their own solutions. Once you get past the barriers that have prevented clear communication, difficulties are easy to resolve. In fact, the next chapter offers some creative and simple solutions to some of the most common conflicts couples face: money, sex, housework, kids, work stress. But remember, these solutions work only for problems that can be solved. If compromise still seems like a distant goal to you, then the problem you are grappling with may not be solvable after all. That means it's time to turn to the advice on coping with perpetual problems in Chapter 10. 9. Coping with typical solvable problems. Work stress, in-laws, money, sex, housework, a new baby. These are the most typical areas of marital conflict, so there's a good chance at least some of them are hot buttons in your relationship. Even in very happy and stable marriages, these issues are perennials. Although every relationship is different, there's a reason why these particular conflicts are so common. They touch upon some of the marriage's most important work. Many people pay lip service to the notion that a good marriage takes work. But what specifically does this mean? Every marriage is faced with certain emotional tasks that husband and wife need to accomplish together for the marriage to grow and deepen. These tasks come down to attaining a rich understanding between husband and wife. A marriage needs this understanding in order for both people to feel safe and secure in it. When these tasks are not accomplished, the marriage feels not like a port in the storm of life, but just another storm. When there's conflict in one of these six common areas, usually it's because husband and wife have different ideas about these tasks, their importance, or how they should be accomplished. If the conflict is perpetual, no amount of problem-solving savvy will fix it. The tension will de-escalate only when you both feel comfortable living with your ongoing difference. But when the issue is solvable, the challenge is to find the right strategy for conquering it. If you're not sure whether your conflict is solvable or perpetual, refer back to Chapter 7. Here, we've listed these six hotspots, the tasks they each represent for a marriage, and practical advice for addressing the solvable disagreements they often trigger. Stress and more stress. The task, making your marriage a place of peace. Most days, Stephanie and Todd get home from work within a few minutes of each other. Too often, instead of a loving reunion, they find themselves in a shouting match. Todd, who has been kowtowing to a difficult boss all day, gets annoyed when he can't find the mail because Stephanie moved it off the table for the nth time. Stephanie, who has a deadline at work and knows she'll be up late working, feels her anger surge when she opens the refrigerator and discovers nothing but strawberry Snapple. "There's no food," she yells. "I can't believe you didn't go to the supermarket like you promised. What's wrong with you?" The real question is what's going wrong between Todd and Stephanie. The answer is that they are bringing their work stress home, and it's sabotaging their marriage. Scheduling formal griping sessions can prevent the spillover of everyday stress into your marriage. There's no doubt that work stress has become an increasing factor in marital dissatisfaction. Today's couples work an average of 1,000 hours more each year than people did 30 years ago. There is less time for talking, relaxing, eating, and even sleeping. No wonder the days of the cheerful, "Honey, I'm home," are history for so many families. Most likely, Honey is working too, and has come home with a stack of papers she needs to prepare for tomorrow's presentation to a client. Or maybe she's been waiting tables all day, and the last thing she wants to do is wait on her man. Solution: acknowledge that at the end of a long, stressful day, you may need time to yourselves to decompress before interacting with each other. If you are feeling suddenly outraged by something your spouse did, realize that the incident may be overblown in your mind because you're feeling so tense. Likewise, if your spouse comes home with a cloud over his head and your "what's wrong?" gets answered with a snarl, try not to take it personally. He or she probably just had a bad day. Rather than making the situation worse by lashing out, let it go. Build time to unwind into your daily schedule. Make it a ritual, whether it entails lying on your bed and reading your mail, going for a jog, or meditating. Of course, some couples find that the easiest way to relax is to enlist each other's help. If so, try the soothing techniques described in detail in Chapter 8. Once you're both feeling relatively composed, it's time to come together and talk about each other's day. Consider this a sanctioned whining session, during which each person gets to complain about any catastrophes that occurred, while the other is understanding and supportive. Relations with in-laws. The task, establishing a sense of we-ness or solidarity between husband and wife. Although mother-in-law jokes told by men are a traditional staple of comedy routines, the real